This is Jacob Sharatov, and you're listening to FilmWax Radio.
Hey everybody, this is your host Adam Sharkoff. The show is called the FilmWax Radio. You know, we talk about independent film. If that's what you're interested in, you've tuned into the right spot. Thank you for doing that. This is episode number 289. We just did a big live podcast this past Friday, the 24th of April, over at Videology in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. We had a nice crowd come out, so thanks to everybody who showed up. It was, I think, a successful thing. I think we achieved what we set out to achieve. We talked about the Montclair Film Festival. The executive director, Tom Hall, came and spoke about it. We had three of the filmmakers on hand to talk about their films that are all playing at the Montclair Film Festival. Morgan Neville Skyped in, but that was terrific. We had a little glitch. One thing I took away from the whole experience was you need somebody to run the technology end of doing an event like that. So that is my commitment to you if you should come out to a future live podcast. Even though it didn't infringe too much, it's just not a good idea. So that's what I took away. But more importantly, we had Morgan Neville Skype in. That worked out well. Morgan Neville has a documentary he co-directed with a filmmaker named Robert Gordon called Best of Enemies, which, again, is about the very, very entertaining but, oh my goodness, difficult relationship between Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley Jr. and how they did a series of debates. I think it was 1964. I may be wrong about that, but anyway, and this documentary is about those debates and their relationship, and it was terrific. Then we had Jessica Edwards on with Mavis, and we showed a trailer, and she talked about making that documentary. And finally, we have the filmmaker Chad Gracia and the subject of his documentary, The Russian Woodpecker, Fyodor Alexandrovich. And so what you're going to hear now is the live podcast with all of those folks, plus my friend Scott Rogowski, who is a comedian and a talk show host in his own right. He has a series of evening events he does at like Caroline's on Broadway and the UCB. And he came over and he showed us a clip and gave us a he came on and he talked about what he does. I thought it might be nice just to sort of start things off a little light and funny with Scott. And so as we settled in, and then we moved on to the main task at hand, which was to apprise everyone about this great festival going into its fourth season. The Montclair Film Festival will begin tomorrow, Friday, May the 1st, and run through the 10th of May. I'm going tomorrow night for the big opening night festivities. The opening night film is Hello, My Name is Doris, which stars Sally Field in a lead starring role of a film in first time in many years, and looking forward to it. Can't wait to see it. And then we'll be going back there a couple more times at least to see some more films, and I'm very excited to check out this relatively new festival and to support the folks over there. So thank you to Tom Hall and also to Ina Pira, who is a ubiquitous film festival person and no doubt will be running her own film festival in a matter of time. Anyway, thank the two of them for supporting the live podcast. I know that they were appreciated that I did it, but it's a very mutual situation. Again, it went off real well, so you'll be able to listen to that right about now. So let's get into it. This is the live podcast. It obviously doesn't sound like quite like it a typical podcast. We're dealing in a larger room with an audience, but nevertheless, I hope you do enjoy it. And then we'll be back afterward with a little bit of a wind down. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for coming out. Let me just let you know what's going on. I'll give you a little bit of the background here. So the Montclair Film Festival is running from May 1st through the 10th in Montclair, New Jersey, and it's a great festival. It's how many years has the festival been going on?
Four.
Huh?
Year four.
This is year four? Okay. Thought it was longer than... No, it's fine. It's good. 4 years is great. And it's like a festival on the radar of everybody. It's already a very big deal. Stephen Colbert is associated with the festival. He's now going to take over David Letterman, right? Thank you. Okay. Anyway, so my idea was to do this event like a week ahead of time and you know, take advantage of their festival and bring out some filmmakers that are have made some amazing documentaries in this case, three wonderful documentaries. So first, though, my name, by the way, is Adam Chartoff, and I have this podcast called Film Wax Radio. Thank you. Thanks so much. No. Thank you. And no, actually, I do thank you, and because there are tens of thousands of listeners of Marc Maron's. But we're working on it, so this kind of helps. So I love the Montclair Film Festival already. Tom Hall will bring him out here in a couple minutes to talk about the festival and introduce it to you. Yeah, nice round of applause for Tom Hall. We're not bringing him on yet, though. There are three filmmakers, one of whom is going to Skype in from Hot Docs in Toronto. So we'll Skype in Morgan in a little bit. And then after that, we've got Jessica Edwards, filmmaker. Morgan, of course, made Best of Enemies, which we'll talk about. Jessica made a film called Mavis. I don't know if you're listening to some of the music I was playing. And then finally, we are really excited. We have the Chad Gracia and Fyodor Alexandrovich from the Russian Woodpecker. So we're going to get all that in under 10 minutes. So, but first, I'd like to talk to a friend of mine who I just went to see Scott's show the other night at Caroline's on Broadway. He had Richard Kind and Amy Sedaris, and one of Conan O'Brien's writers, Brian Stack. Scott's got this show. It's called Running Late with Scott Rogowski. It's really funny. We're going to talk to Scott for a couple of minutes, and we're going to see some clips and have some fun, and then we'll get into the next section after that. Hey, Scott. Scott Rogowski. Thank you for coming out, Scott.
Thanks for having me, Adam. I'm dressed in my radio outfit. Podcasting's finest.
Yeah.
For those listening at home, I'm wearing a bespoke three-piece suit and $1,000 Gucci loafers. But hi, everybody.
Oh, and also we're going to do a little trivia questions. I know you may not be as big a film buff as you are in knowledgeable about the world of film.
As a gym buff.
Is it?
Clearly.
All right. We can start off. You want to start us off?
With what?
With the first trivia question.
Oh, okay. I'm reading
then
the trivia question.
We'll talk about your show.
All right, this is news to me.
We're going to throw in some trivia questions written by my friend Herbert Gamble in the audience. If you throw him a clap.
You're going to ask me a trivia question? Or is this for the audience?
No. You'll ask the trivia. Well, question will actually be on the screen, so you just have to sit there and look handsome. What I'm going to do is throughout, we'll just do some trivia. Now, here's what's going to happen. I hope you brought smartphones. Whoever's first with the right answer, and you send it to my Facebook page, facebook.com/filmwaxradio. Okay, so you all have to like it too. You win a prize, and it can be anything from a DVD. We have DVDs here from Kino Lorber, wonderful documentaries in this case. And then also, thanks to the Montclair Film Festival, we'll give away tickets to some screenings as well. You gotta get yourself to Montclair, New Jersey, but it's just, how far is that?
Like, it's
5-6 minutes away. Walking.
Yeah. Take your city bike. Are there city bike docks over there?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good. Those are the least complicated rules and regulations for a contest, by the way. What do you have to do, Adam? Don't explain it again. How about you shout out the answer? Can they do that?
There it is. So this I made.
Don't shout out the answer.
Don't shout out the answer. These are the rules for the game.
You just want people to like your Facebook page.
I do.
How about just tell them, like the Facebook page and shout out the answer. Can they do that?
Actually, anybody who shouts anything out gets a DVD.
Thrown at them.
Okay, here's the first question. Well, you can read it. I don't have to read it. Is there anybody with seeing imperative?
Yes, everyone listening to your podcast. This is a podcast, right?
That's right. Thank you. Thanks, Scott. This is why
I'm here.
He's been promoted to sidekick. What 1959 11 Academy Awards winning film did Gore Vidal, and you'll get the reference in a minute when we talk to Morgan,
Gore Vidal worked on as uncredited script doctor. Now don't Google it. Just like my Facebook page. And if you get, whoever gets it and they answer it first, we'll make sure you get one of these DVDs.
And the original shrink wrapping.
For this one, Tom, can we do two tickets to Best of Enemies, which is, so you can have that too. If you think you can make it out, don't just take the tickets and go, don't go. Okay. Scott.
Yes.
I've wasted enough of your precious time.
Yes, you have.
I recognize that. Tell me, please, what...
thank you for paying me $3,000 to be here. I appreciate that. Oh, I wasn't supposed to. I wasn't supposed to.
No. Tell me a little bit about yourself, first of all. I know you're living in Park Slope now, but you're...
No, I'm living in Williamsburg now.
I moved.
What? Yeah.
So why were you late?
I'm local. Because I was coming from somewhere else. That's not...
My business.
Okay. Work, you know?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
In the city, yeah. The big city.
So you're now living in Williamsburg, so... Yeah. And you... I don't know how you have any time, because he does... How many shows do you do? Like, how frequently do you do these?
Once a month.
But it's a tremendous amount of work.
There's a lot of work going into it, yeah.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
And you're very prepared. And he has, like, a packed house. Every show I've been to, I've been to three of your shows now.
That's what I'm aiming for. I want them all to be better than the last one. But, yeah, Wednesdays was great. Amy Sedaris was a treat. She's a national treasure. And super funny. Doesn't get out to a lot of live events, but she's, you know, Letterman 34 times and...
She was sort of describing it the other night when I was there. It was 2 nights ago. She was describing how she was doing her Bette Midler version of, you know, when Bette Midler sang for Johnny Carson, right?
Right. If you saw Amy Sedaris last week giving Letterman the send-off, a musical medley, if you hadn't seen it, Google it. It's very, very funny. But yeah, she was talking about that. And I had Richard Kind, who has 180 film and TV credits, which is incredible. And he's one of the best talk show guests, who doesn't do a lot of TV either at talk shows. But he's done mine twice, and yeah, I want to have him on every night if I could. He is really
he's
just,
so funny.
He just comes out with great stories, great pedophile jokes. He told a good one on Wednesday. I probably should repeat it for your audience because I think this crowd would love it. You guys aren't the pedophile jokes, right? It's really more, it's got wit to it. You hear about the Jewish pedophile? He told the kids, take it easy with the candy.
You did.
It's a witty, it's a Jewish joke, it's not a pedophile joke.
You did his joke.
That was Richard Kind's joke, which you probably stole from some other old Jew.
Sure.
Somewhere. That's the nature of old Jews telling jokes.
So in addition, so you have the night, the talk show, which is like a setup. You could just, somebody from a major network could kind of whisk the show off of the Carolina stage and put it right on television. That's how real.
I'm waiting for it. Anyone here own a major network?
You have a sidekick?
No.
Sorry, stepped on
one. My dad.
Your dad?
My sidekick, yeah. My dad, Marty, is 66 years old and fills in. He couldn't make it on Wednesday. My step-aunt, Elise, filled in on Wednesday. Keep it in the family, you know. Don't have to pay family. And yeah, he's great. My dad's been doing it for 3 years with me. 3.5 years.
It's really charming when you're there. It's harder to appreciate it from the description.
And psychologically damaging for me. I don't know why I had my father next to me. I don't... I've talked to my therapist about it. No one else performs their father. I don't know why I have to do this, but I do.
I'm sure that's not true. I'm pretty sure
it's true. Conan doesn't have his father next to him. Letterman's father's probably no longer with him.
All right. One of the other things that is very funny what you do, besides the talk show, it's a lot of laughs, is you also create video content and you do some very funny bits. And one that comes to mind since you mentioned Marty, your dad, was... Yeah. A clip you did, rather, a movie you did with your parents.
A movie.
It's a short.
Film.
It's a short film. That's my realm, so. It's a bit. I don't know.
It's a YouTube video.
It's cinematic, though. And we're going to get it into Montclair next year.
Please.
I want you guys to see, so send it up, and we'll take a look.
So this is actually to further denigrate this, what you're about to see. This was made for Playboy.com. And, well, I mean, I don't have to set up, because I set up in the video. It's me with my parents, my real parents. You'll meet my mom and dad. I got my mom involved, much to her chagrin, in this one. And we filmed it at their house, my former house.
Hi, everybody.
Here we go.
Scott Rogowski.
You want to not start it now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I just said my name. My name's Scott Rogowski, but blow it up to full screen. Oh, God. Turn that off.
Let's not see the other one. I think we need to
journey.
Okay.
My parents are the stars of that one.
They are. They're very funny, and they get you, obviously.
They do. I can give you an epilogue, guys. Lindsay and I actually went on a date, and it was horrible. One and done.
Have you ever had a successful
date? No, actually.
Online dating. I mean,
online dating. It's tough. Yeah, I dated. I mean, years ago, before these apps, I did some J dating. Yeah. Where you have to pay for it.
Pay for the online service.
Yeah, $30. You got to pay for everything.
Yeah.
I had a couple of girlfriends out of there, but I'm done. I've sworn them all off.
So are you going to go through more of the setups again?
I'm up and doing live podcasting is going to get me late. That's that's why I'm doing this, Adam. That's why I'm here.
Keep
trying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you very much. Let's just make sure people can find you. So,
yeah.
RunningLateShow.com.
And then we're doing one more show at Caroline's May 21st with Robert Klein, the stand-up comedian
Robert Klein.
And the author A.J. Jacobs.
From Robert Klein.
We're going to find out if he stopped it. Man, that's going to be the first question I ask. And then, A.J. Jacobs from The Year of Living Biblically and all those great immersive journalism, Esquire magazine. And he's doing this really cool project, which we're going to talk about. He's doing a global family reunion, I believe on June 6th or June 8th. I'm not sure, but it's going to be at the Hall of Science in Queens. And he's literally trying to get the entire world to join him, and because his theories were all related. And it's true, if you go back far enough... you can go to his website and type in your name and your grandparents, and he can connect you to anybody in history. I mean, Albert Einstein, Mark Twain, Beyonce, we're all related, 17th cousin, 24th cousin, whatever it is. And he's trying to get a global family reunion going. So that's I'm going to be doing something for that as well, doing some emceeing, but he's going to be on my show talking about it. And I suggest you join and come to the event. It'll be great. A lot of fun events and speakers and probably free food, which is why I go to most things. Where's my sandwich? Nothing here.
I brought a tuna.
One drink ticket.
Tuna salad sandwich for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
From a gas station.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So is that it? Am I off the hook?
Well, yes. But all those. You have more videos also off your website.
RunningLateShow.com. Just I'm pimping that, and then the Facebook page. Yeah. Like his Facebook page, and then like mine.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, man. Scott Rogowski. Thank you.
Thank you, Adam. Adam, thanks, guys.
You are liberated. You are liberated. Thank you for that. Thank you, Scott. So, again, Montclair Film Festival running May 1st through the 10th. You have programs in front of you. Thanks to Mr. Malloy.
Thank you.
Dana. Thank you, Dana Krieger. We're going to now bring up Tom Hall, Executive Director of the Montclair Film Festival. Hey, Tom. Funny man, Tom Hall.
I got to follow a comedian. That's amazing.
Well, do you identify as a comedian?
See?
That's okay.
I'm dying
already. Don't worry about it. You can knock over as many, many things as you want. You're my guest here. You can break it. Don't worry about it. We'll replace it. Tom, I'm also on my resume. Clumsy transitions are at the very top. I apologize. This is still relatively new for me, so have mercy. Tom, first year at Montclair.
It is.
How are you finding it?
Torture. No, I'm kidding. Things are great. Things are going really well.
I'm glad.
The festival begins next Friday, a week from tonight, so this is crunch time. A lot of the details are falling into place. I mean, we've locked the films, tickets are on sale, people are coming, that's all happening.
Right.
It's now sort of the final push into the festival, all the logistics, the minor little tweaks. But we're in great shape. I have a great team working with wonderful people. Uh-huh. I'm very excited.
Great. I've seen, of course, the three films that we're kind of highlighting tonight, which again are Mavis, the documentary about Mavis Staples. And then we also have Best of Enemies, about the complex relationship between William F. Buckley Jr. and Gore Vidal. It's fantastic, all through archival footage. And then The Russian Woodpecker, about this incredible theory about that Fedor, who we're going to meet in a little bit, has that about how this curious antenna, this huge antenna that was built in the location of Chernobyl and was a...
failure.
It was a failure. It was an enormous failure and embarrassment for the government. And so We're going to hear Fedor's and the film's theory about exactly what happened and the relationship to that failure to the incident at Chernobyl incident. It's an incredible film. So what else?
That's it. We have three films. What's 10 days.
What's the opening night film next Friday?
So we're opening with Michael Showalter's Hello, My Name is Doris, which was the Audience Award winner at South by Southwest. Michael will be there. We're really excited about that movie.
Is the flying nun coming?
She's not so far, but we're trying. The film played South by, we actually called them the day of their premiere, and we're, as film programmers do, we were begging in the hopes that they would attend the festival and bring the film, and we offered them opening night, and they accepted right away.
Right.
And then 2 days ago, I guess last week, they got picked up by Roadside for $1.75 million, and they're saving for 2016. It hasn't played the East Coast, so we have the East Coast premiere, and it's I'm very excited about that. You won't see it till next year unless you come to Montclair. So come to Montclair, see the movie. It's going to be, I think, a great night. I'm excited to talk to Michael Showalter.
Yeah.
And do the Q&A with him. He's really great.
He's a comedian actor too, right?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Member of the State. He did a great movie called The Baxter, which I'm sure a lot of people have seen, which I love. Right. And this is a, sort of a change in direction. Actually, another person who worked on the movie, Laura Taruso, who we did a lot with in Sarasota. We showed a lot of her short films. This is based on one of her shorts. I'm hoping she'll make it out. She's an old friend, but it's a terrific movie. A lot of fun. It's a crowd pleaser. I think our audience is going to walk away sort of on cloud nine, buying tickets for the next 9 days.
My name is Doris. Hello, my name is Doris. And it's Sally Field. And is she living in Williamsburg, or does she move?
No, I think she's on Staten Island in the movie. But she comes to Williamsburg.
Yeah.
And she's trying to date a younger man who she falls in love with. It's Max Greenfield from The New Girl, and she falls in love with him through the office, you know, where they work together. And decides that in order to attract him, she's going to become, you know, do the young stuff and do what the hip kids do. So it's very sweet. Got a big heart. I don't think Sally Fields had a lead performance in 20 something years. So for her to, you know, she carries the movie on her shoulders. Really, she's terrific in the movie.
Where did you see it?
I saw it online when I was given a screener, because I can't get to South by Southwest ever, because it's always in programming season. So they sent us a link and we watched it and loved it.
Yeah. So, and how many films are in the festival?
We have 77 features, 60 shorts, so about 137 exactly. Mm-hmm. And with events, and we're doing conversations with, Jonathan Demme's coming, Barbara Koppel's coming, Michael Ian Black will be interviewing Bobcat Goldthwait, which I'm also very excited about at the festival. We're working on, Patrick Wilson always hosts, he lives in Montclair. It's a weird city in that all these media and film people live there. Dan Batsack used to run Miramax and now runs Cohen Media, lives there.
Okay.
Mark Ehrman, the former president of Think Film, who now runs Paladin, lives there. Stephen Colbert and his wife Evie, who's our vice chair of our board, live there. Patrick Wilson and Dagmara Domenicek live there. Half of the New York Times, I believe, lives there. Four Daily Show producers and writers live there. Colbert Report writers live there. It's just an insane media town.
Why do we have festivals in New York City?
I know, yeah.
I don't understand the practical nature of that.
Exactly. So we were like, you know, when I was thinking about taking this job and sort of working in to build this festival, the attraction of that audience, you know, Michael Slovis, who's shooting all the Game of Thrones, he's directing half the season.
Don't say Game of Thrones.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Am I not allowed to say that? I think it'd be good for, like, your Facebook page if you just hashtag Game of Thrones on it. People are like, what's this? No?
Don't keep saying Game of Thrones. Okay. Here's an issue.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm kidding. It was news. It's all.
He also shot Breaking Bad. I don't know. He shot the entire...
Yeah. Breaking Bad. You can keep saying.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
But the service of Breaking Bad fame, who was the DP on the entire series, lives in town. I mean,
right,
it's a ridiculous town.
Yeah.
So we're very lucky that we have a very savvy, sophisticated audience who, you know, have a lot of connections. Our narrative centerpiece, for example, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
I saw that in Nashville.
Yeah, it's a fantastic movie. The executive producer lives in town. I mean, like, you know, it's a fluke.
Yeah.
So my job is really easy because I just put a bunch of names on an email and be like, oh, yeah, we'll show you a movie. Sure.
Well, it's sort of like Brooklyn is the, you know, where you can't walk to the deli to get milk without running into two filmmakers, one on the way, one on the way back. Sounds like that's sort of similar in...
Yes, although Brooklyn, 4 million people? Montclair, 37,000 people. So it's a much, the ratio is insane. It's really, We're very fortunate to have the support that we have in, of these people in town. So it's been, you know, there's a lot of growth potential here, a lot of connections that we can make. I think we're going to connect our filmmakers with a really smart audience, with the press, on a big scale. So that's our goal. We really want to grow. I think there's a lot of growth that's going to happen in Montclair.
For listeners, you can go to Montclair Film Fest.
Yep. .org.
To get tickets, check out the schedule, and so everybody here has a program or can get a program. So we got to get to Morgan in a minute, but first let's do another trivia question because that went over so well the first time around.
Thank you both for answering.
Let's do that. Let's go to. I never figured out how to quite get this slideshow working, so I apologize. Should we go back to the rules? Don't shout out. Answer. First person to send correct answer to. My Facebook page for Filmwax Radio was. Okay, question number two. Tierney's Taverns, a bar in Montclair, New Jersey, was used as a location of what popular television show? Don't shout out the answer.
I would also like to say Tierney's Tavern is where we host our volunteer thank you party.
Really?
Yeah.
But if you shoot it, that would confuse the... All right.
Yeah.
Morgan Neville directed 23 from Stardom 2 years ago, got the Oscar. Well, the film got the Oscar for Best Documentary category. Remember 20 Feet from Stardom? Right? That was also on HBO. I think that HBO picked that up, right? Anyway, it was very ubiquitous.
It was a Radius movie.
Okay, it was everywhere. Now he has a new film that he co-directed with Robert Gordon. Correct me at any point. I mean, you can't... When these two guys share the screen...
William
F. Buckley Jr. I mean, it's riveting and it's just incredible to see. So... let's look at the trailer first, and then we'll try Skyping. That makes the most sense.
Gore told me he hired a researcher. He wanted to paint National Review as being racist, if he could, anti-Semitic.
I don't think he was really interested in conducting a debate about the issues or about the parties or about the policies or about the platforms of the two parties. What he wanted to do was to expose Del Buckley.
Their confrontation is about lifestyle. What kind of people should we be? Their real argument in front of the public is who is the better person.
Okay, so I just heard from Morgan, and he is ready to go. Let's give this a shot.
There you are.
Oh, there you are.
There we go.
Okay, I'll hang up now. So here is me. Here's Tom Hall.
Hello.
Hello. Hey.
Hi, Morgan.
Hi there.
Thanks for sitting around waiting. Are you at, where are you, in Toronto?
Yep, I'm at Hot Dogs right now.
Great. Congratulations. And then you're running to then you go to Montclair.
I'm not going to make it to Montclair.
He's screening on Mother's Day, and I believe he loves his mother.
Oh, I don't understand that at all. What are you saying?
It's my wife.
Oh, and his wife. Is
oh, okay. I understand. Well... I have the advantage, as does maybe two or three other people in the room, have seen Best of Enemies, but it is so entertaining. So, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Have you had
Thanks.
You're welcome. Have you had a screening yet at Hot Dogs?
Right as we speak.
Oh,
there's a crowded theater watching it for the first time.
Oh, okay, great. So that is your is this your Where did it?
Canadian premiere.
Canadian premiere. Oh, it's right, because it premiered, world premieres at Sundance Film Festival.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess they call it the international premiere here.
Right. That's clever. That's very good. That makes sense. The first non-U.S. premiere. Understood. It's about the brotherly relationship between William F. Buckley and Barbie doll.
Yeah, exactly. You know, people talk about frenemies. And I keep saying, you know, there's no friend here. This is old school, straight up enemy.
They really did. And it's not like, you know, like they, like Gore Vidal was just really reveled in his hatred of William F. Buckley. You know, it wasn't even a guilty experience for him.
Yeah, well, first of all, just to talk about Gore for a minute, you know, Gore was never a warm and cuddly person. And he said, it's not enough for me to succeed, it's that others must fail. And another quote of his was, if you look under my cold, hard exterior, you'll find ice water underneath. So he was not the kind of person who you would call tender. And William Buckley was his bête noir.
His bête noir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That there was something about the two of them that brought out the worst in the other. And it's a psychological battle, in addition to being a political battle.
Yeah, it made great television.
It did. I mean, it made entertaining television. And, you know, what's interesting is the film started as a bootleg copy we got of the debates. And I was just interested in them. I personally was interested because my first job at college was working as Gore Vidal's fact checker.
Is that right?
Wow. Yes.
Wow.
It was the worst job I ever had. Because I would call him up on the phone in Italy and tell him he got very small facts wrong. And he would yell at me.
Did he have
so one? Just did. But I really understand just how deep this rant with the them, nor how pivotal it was in kind of news media history. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the pleasures of making the film. Sometimes work on documentaries and they, you dig down and get richer and deeper, and sometimes you just hit rock, don't get anything. This was one of those projects. The more we kept going, the better it kept getting.
The better what?
You kept getting.
The better it kept getting.
Better it kept getting. And I don't know, what did you discover, I guess, from making the film, through the process of making the film? What was something you didn't expect or was a surprise to you, if anything?
Well,
because you obviously knew at least Gore Vidal.
One was the news media story, the news history, which in a nutshell is that ABC was the distant third network. We don't think about it these days in those terms, but
before
they were just struggling for ratings.
Yeah.
And they had Buckley and Vidal on basically as a stunt to try and get ratings. And at the time, TV news commentary was hardly existent, and what was there was very civil and polite and like a 1 minute at the end of the newscast with John Kenneth Albrecht or somebody. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time they really had people on who hated each other politically and personally, and I think they were expecting sparks. I don't think they were expecting the conflagration. And what it did, and this was something I just didn't know, mm-hmm. was it really changed how other news outlets saw what this kind of debate could do. And right after this, CBS started Point Counterpoint on 60 Minutes. NBC introduced commentary and debate. And what happened is people realized, you know, all they really needed were the sparks. They didn't need smart people to say them or be behind them. And the fact that this is, you know, not the origin event, but one of those origin events that led to the kind of unditocracy we have today. Mm-hmm. And that was a story I maybe felt intuitively, but I didn't realize the dots were so clearly connected.
Mm-hmm. So it was a case where some TV executive thought, let's get on two guys like pit bulls and you know, like face them off and get some good ratings. I mean, that of course now is tip. I mean,
yeah. I mean, at the time, ABC couldn't afford to do gavel to gavel coverage because they needed to make money running Bewitched and Batman. So they had these guys on. They asked Buckley. They hired Buckley first and asked him if he would be willing to be the conservative commentator. He said yes. And would he be willing to debate a liberal? And he said, I'll debate anybody except for a communist or Gore Vidal. And of course, the next point he made was to Gore Vidal.
The majority of the film is archive, of course. We see, I guess it's about an hour and a half, maybe, the film, and with the majority of it, you do have lots of talking heads that that knew these guys or were around and share their memories and anecdotes. But how much footage is there of these two guys? Because obviously it's quite condensed.
Yeah, so the total amount of debates are about 2.5 hours of debates.
Okay.
And ultimately the film is about 90 minutes. And it wasn't just the archive of the debates, but it was just the archive of the era. It's pretty much an archive doc. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just dug and dug. We made it over 5 years. So we had a lot of time to dig because we had no money to do anything else. So we just kept putting the word out. And over time, we kept finding nuggets and collecting them. Mm-hmm. And we had so many of them. I mean, it was great. Fortunately, they both loved being documented. As Gore Vidal says, the two things you never turn down are sex and appearing on television.
Great with the quip.
Yes.
Yeah. And William F. Buckley, on the other hand, he was kind of a lizard-like, kind of a creepy guy. But he seemed a little bit, toward the end of his time, seemed sorry that he lost his temper.
You know, one of those questions is...
where they lose their temper.
So who won the debates?
Yeah.
And Buckley had been goaded by Dahl the entire time and finally loses it and calls him a queer and threatens to punch him on camera. And this is after Gore's called him a crypto-Nazi. Yeah. So this is the level of discourse.
And people had trouble with the queer, not the crypto-Nazi.
At the time, crypto-Nazi was fine.
That's fine, yeah. I'm not even sure what a crypto-Nazi is, but...
Can only... It's the opposite of a proto-Nazi. Okay. And really, it wasn't the names as much as the fact that Buckley lost his cool.
Yes.
He had had a TV show, Firing Line, for 33 years. And he was the king of cool in that show. You know, he would toy with his guests. He was always in charge. And it was the one time in his life he lost control publicly. And he was deeply ashamed about it for his whole life.
Right.
I'll say that Buckley was one of those other revelations to me. Not that I came to like his politics anymore, because I don't. But that Buckley really cared about debate, mm-hmm. the theater of debate, far more than he cared about ideas and philosophy. And in a way, being a conservative, a dialogue was the way for him to have material to debate with. And most of his friends were liberals. He told a conservative I interviewed not to hang out with the other conservatives because they're boring. And he had kind of a salon in New York with friends like Joan Didion and Gay Talese and Wolf. And he was somebody that really liked to have open discussions. And people like Christopher Hitchens told me that after they had a cantankerous debate on television, Buckley turned to him and said, well, let's go get a drink. And this was Buckley's thing. It was just theater. Vidal was the opposite. You know, I could never imagine Vidal hanging out with conservatives just to have lively dinner conversation.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, Buckley was wanted to hang out with people who lived lives of the mind. That was what he connected to. So.
And he's one of those conservatives, a little bit like Goldwater, that although he was extreme right in his day, he saw the movement he launched come to where he was around the Reagan era, and then path him heading further and further right. And you think about Buckley today, you know, what would he have thought of Michelle Bachmann, you know, or Tea Party people? I mean, he, more than anything, was an intellectual, and I think he would have been embarrassed by it.
Well, Best of Enemies, the screenings, right, Tom? Sunday, May 10th at 4:30 at MKA Upper School. So it's one of your venues, the Upper School.
It's a large venue.
I bet it is. I don't doubt it. Well, thank you, Morgan.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Enjoy your Q&A.
Thanks.
All right, guys. Next up, we're going to bring up Jessica Edwards, who is the director of Mavis. Go watch a clip. Thank you very much.
Let's watch a clip.
Now we've come this evening to bring you some joy, some happiness, inspiration, and some positive vibrations.
I know a place.
I don't think anybody's ever heard a voice like Mavis.
If you're walking around thinking that.
Growing up in a black household in the 60s and 70s, the Staple Singers are part of my family soundtrack.
We were just family, you know, sounding like family.
With Mavis leading the way, the Staple Singers and Crayon.
The Staples were Chicago gospel pioneers. Very few gospel singers took an interest in civil rights.
And I'm determined to go all the way until Dr. King's dream has been realized.
She's not just about chasing hits and being famous and being popular. She's a messenger.
Says you can watch the sun, see how steady she runs. Don't let it catch you with the work
I know
done.
That we have been around the world and we're on stage, but I am Mavis, everyday people.
I've been along to the band. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
I've weathered the storms. I have fallen down, and I've gotten back up.
On up. Hello, dear. How are you?
Fine.
Tom, come back over here. Tom, don't go over there. Okay, this has gone over so well. Jesse, we're going to do another trivia question.
Trivia.
Don't laugh at that. That's.
This is like live radio.
It sort of is.
Like radio.
Yeah. You're. By the way, Jessica.
Sponsored by Iodent. 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 Do do do. And trivia. Now for trivia. Don't shout out the answer.
I didn't. Wow. I had no idea. You're sort of the Joan Rivers of the documentary set.
Just that I've had two cocktails already.
Oh, very good. Here we go. Oh, you want to read the question?
Do I have to do it in the voice? Okay.
Yeah.
I can see it.
You have to do it in the voice.
William F. Buckley's son, Christopher, is the author of a satirical novel that was made into a 2005 movie directed by Jason Reitman. Name the film. Don't shout out the answer.
Is anybody actually answering them online every check?
So.
Oh,
it's
come
okay.
on.
We're just going to give away. No, no, please do. Because we have tickets.
Answer online.
Okay, very good. We have tickets to. We have Tom. There you are.
Tom, what are we giving away?
Yeah, for you. Tom, we have two tickets to give away to one of the screens, or is there how many screens do we have of Mavis?
We are doing one enormous screening.
It's enormous.
Oh. Enormous screening of Mavis.
It's the biggest screening ever.
It's going to be huge. Stephen Colbert will be doing the Q&A with Mavis Staples.
Yes.
What?
That's
incredible. Yeah. I might have to come to that.
Not Stephen Colbert. Like, not Stephen Colbert that you know from television. Like, the new Stephen Colbert.
Yes.
Nobody knows what's going to happen.
Of Running Late with Scott Rogowski. Yeah. Wait. So, we have one ticket to give away.
We have a pair of tickets.
No.
A pair of tickets for Mavis.
One ticket.
No. We have a pair of tickets, and also Adam is getting a ticket, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I'm coming
for
to that.
Mavis.
And it's worth seeing.
Absolutely.
It's definitely worth seeing multiple times. It's such a... I was in tears, actually, at some point. It was so beautiful. When she sings, comes this sort of completely visceral, emotional way of performing.
It does make you want to call your dad after.
Yeah, that was very... Yeah, that's... I got very choked up.
Yeah.
When she starts... There's a moment in it... Let's go to the clip. We don't have the clip, sorry. But there's a moment where she... somebody puts on...
Jeff Tweedy,
of course, the Wilco thing. He puts on...
It's a track called Friendship from the Lost Pop Staples album. Pops is Mavis's dad. And they listen to this track in the loft, which is the Wilco loft in Chicago. And Mavis is very moved by listening to her dad's voice. So.
if you know him from the past, or if you watch the documentary and are introduced to him through footage, you just can see what a gentle man he was, but also that same just, I don't know, just...
That was actually one of my saddest things that I never got to meet Pop Staples. And, and we've screened the film a couple of times now, and people will come up to me after the film and be like, I saw Pop's play in New York City at Central Park like 10, 15 years ago. And like, I'll just want to talk to them more, you know, just find out what they saw.
You always worry in those situations like that these performing families are going to have all this dysfunction and horror in their backstory, either the Jacksons or whatever, like this terrible backstory. And then you watch Mavis, and it's like they were like a beautiful, functional performing family.
It's true.
Which makes for a different kind of movie in a way. Like, it's a real celebration of her past and their family story.
Right. It, like, it means that it can kind of work. That was actually something that struck me very early as I started doing research, because I was, like, waiting for the, like, well, then somebody, you know, had a baby out of wedlock, or, like, you know, something crazy happened, a la, like, you know, Aretha Franklin, Michael Jack, you know, the list goes on. And there really wasn't. They really were there for each other. And I think that was Pop's, too. Like, he, you know, he was a church man, and so he really needed, he really kept the family together, that the family was sort of the most important thing. And when the family really became successful, even after that, was like they did things because it was good for the family. It wasn't, you know, necessarily about solo careers, etc. So,
and it's true, it is a pretty, I guess, healthy family story, but it is, the movie is not without some tabloid content. Mavis Staples made out with Bob Dylan.
True.
And
totally
he's up there, and he's just like, oh, so when I was here in 1967, I knew the Staples, and he does, and then she's on, is like, we were pretty close, and I know that he asked me out, and he asked Pops, do you think is Mavis seeing anybody? And he's like, no, you know, but I can't, she might be interested in me. and he goes, just talk to her, I don't know, you know. And so she's retelling the story, and she goes, oh, we spent some time. We went out a couple of times. We may have even made out.
She says smooched also.
She says maybe they smooched.
But lovely. Yeah, she was a fox.
She was.
And also Bob Dylan really was influenced by the family a lot in terms of, you know, because he was a young man, you know, listening to their, you know, the Gospel Hour,
right,
like coming out of the Nashville stations and stuff, you know, in Minnesota. And that he still to this day references the Staples family as being some of, you know, that he's the most honored who covered his music.
Right.
Like, I don't know if you guys watched the Grammys or anything like that, but he was honored last year, and he did this, you know, uncharacteristic 30-minute speech at the Grammys, and, you know, thanked a lot of people for covering the songs that he had written. Peter, Paul, and Mary were first, and the Staples Singers were second. And he, I think, was truly, you know, moved by their interest in his writing, because, you know, the stuff that he was writing in the 60s, like these folk songs, like, you know, Pop Staples, like, as a man born in Mississippi, like, you know, how many roads must a man walk down before you can call him a man? Like, as a black man in Mississippi, like, you experience that kind of thing. And I think that, you know, he was truly touched by them covering it.
Well, on that list, you say they were number two?
They were, well, Peter, Paul, and Mary were number one. Right. I mean,
well, it turns out the Birds were, like, 87th.
Yeah.
The band was, like, 412
or
something.
Oh, the band.
You know, so, but actually, LeVon Helm is in the film too.
Yes,
but
LeVon,
it must have been pretty before he, shortly before he passed away.
Yes, mm-hmm.
You know, he looked pretty gaunt, and but he still. Okay, there's another unforgettable moment in the film, very moving as well, where she has a reunion with LeVon.
Yep.
And they of course start jamming, and he just sort of goes from kind of shuffling and very weak to coming alive in that moment, and it's a powerful.
Yeah, we played that scene for someone, I can't remember who it was, but they were basically like, you know, when I go, I want Mavis Staples singing me out. And I was kind of like, yeah, me too. You know, like, it's just this very tender moment that, you know, Mavis really just brings the joy. So, LeVon, the band was friendly with the Staples in the 70s, you know, because if you listen to the band, the harmonies, I mean, I don't know if you guys listen to the band, but I'm a big band lady, and the harmonies are, like, directly influenced by the Staples, which I didn't know before I started making the film, and so they inevitably ended up being really good friends, and the Staples singers are the first people who covered The Wait.
Right, they're on the Last Waltz.
And then they were in Martin Scorsese's Last Waltz, which, mm-hmm. for the documentary fans out there, they actually weren't available for the... Because, as many of you know, I'm sure the Last Waltz was performed in one night, and it was a tribute concert, and everybody came, but the Staples were in Europe, because all they do is tour ever, which is still what Mavis does. She's just on the road all the time. And so Scorsese and Levon and Robbie Robertson were basically like, we need these people in... the show, and they filmed The Wait, which they sang in The Last Waltz together, after the fact. So they basically waited for the Staples to come back from Europe so that they could actually do the performance together. And it's still, like, that's one of my favorite music documentaries. Like, people always ask, like, what music documentaries are influential in your making of this film? And I'm like, well, look at The Wait. I mean, it's sort of perfect. It's like, yeah. a perfect film. Well, I mean, The Last Waltz, not The Wait.
The Last Waltz. Yeah. It's even the few seconds that we see it. There's a shot, which I don't know how much it cost you, but it was good. It was.
Don't get me started.
You see just a few moments of the Wait in Mavis, the documentary, and it just, you see it, and you're just like, oh my god, it's so cinematic. Even those few seconds, like, that's Scorsese.
Right.
What a brilliant filmmaker.
True.
Turns out. Okay.
It's like some of the best shot, the best yes. filmed performances of Mavis and her family that we have, like,
oh, really?
Period.
Yeah. Most of the time, you know, it's like back in the day, they just put the camera on
yeah.
some guy maybe, but... You know,
and Wattstacks, actually. Oh. I don't know if any of you
yeah,
have
sure.
not seen Wattstacks. If you haven't seen Wattstacks, go get it immediately. It's like a document of time passing.
I was just going to say,
please.
One of the things that I love about this movie is that the family is, they see their art making as working class people. They're very connected to sort of their working class roots and where they're from and who they are as artists. And can you talk about, like, her connection to the community? I mean, she's a Chicago royalty,
sure.
but still very connected to the people. I mean,
sure.
this is what it's about.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that I think was so captivating about for me, like, once I started really digging into what the film could be, was that, you know, it's a cliche now, but, like, she is everyday people. Like, you know, she has some of the craziest memories and backstage stories, like, from everyone, you know, from Bob Dylan to, like, Sly and the Family Stone, you know, all kinds of really, really... Mahalia Jackson would, like, come to their backyard and, you know, have, like, July 4th barbecue. And that's not, like, really who she is. And as a person, you know, like, she will still go to the drugstore in her neighborhood. And, I mean, she lives on the south side of Chicago where her family's lived for the, you know, last 60 years or something. And her apartment that she is in now is the same apartment that she's been in for 40 years. So it's not like she's this, you know, like, she's not really, she says it in the film, like, she's not on a solo trip. And I think part of it is that she remains close to the people that were her community. And even though the Staples, especially now, and I think are being rediscovered more now, you know, other musicians really revere her and them. And now she's kind of getting more of this, like, celebrity stardom stuff than even, you know,
yeah.
they had back then. So,
well, they didn't have HBO back then either.
Right.
And a lot of people with
did not. If you have HBO, you can see the movie.
Sorry, another obnoxious reference.
You said you were crappy at transitions earlier.
Yeah.
That was gold.
That was amazing.
No,
I'm
not. Thank you.
That was amazing. The movie will be on HBO.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing
we
for you.
We feel like we...
That really is. It's so,
yes.
And it belongs in HBO. And
well,
then,
we feel like we hit the, like, independent film jackpot, basically,
right.
which
it is.
We're so grateful that people can see the film now, because for a while it was just, like, me and my partner and the editor and our assistant editor, and that's it.
Yeah.
So we're just glad people can see it. And there's going to be lots of people who can see it at Montclair, right? How many people are in that movie theater?
It holds 1,700
people. 1,700 people!
And that's going to take place, by the way, at the
How about that
Montclair
transition?
elementary school auditorium.
No, that's not right.
It's the Wellmont Theater.
The Wellmont.
At Friday at 8 o'clock, Friday, May 8th.
The Flaming Lips have played at the Wellmont Theater, you guys. I mean, come on.
They're going to be back at the there, too, in a couple weeks, I understand. No, they're not. Sorry. I'm just riffing and poorly. Tell me something. By the way, I thought I would hawk your book.
Thank you.
The last time you were on the podcast, I don't remember the number of the episode, but it was like she just came on, and she published this book. It's called Tell Me Something, and
it's a book of advice from documentary filmmakers. Some of your faves are in there.
Yeah.
There's like 60 filmmakers give one piece of advice, and then we took like a portrait of them, a new portrait of them. So Scorsese's in there.
Because he made The Last Waltz.
Because he made The Last Waltz, obviously. Yeah. And Alex Gibney's in there, Rachel Grady, Heidi Ewing, my pals. I made the book.
Steve James,
a lovely patron saint of documentary film. And I made the book a couple years ago because I needed the advice to make this film. So. Yeah.
And now you've obviously, you should go back and get all the responses from everybody in here about
the movie?
How you just shot all the way to the top on HBO. So congratulations for that. And thank you for making the time to come out here.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Now everybody scoot down.
We're bizarre.
So scoot down one because you're off mic now. Yeah, two. That's right.
Get them in here.
Move over. Let's squeeze in. This is exciting. The Russian woodpecker. We'll look at the trailer in a second. But all I can say is that it was a premiered at Sundance. By the way, you were premiered at South by Southwest.
I got nothing. I got an amazing.
You got HBO. So shut up. Just kidding. On the other hand, this film, The Russian Woodpecker, premiered at Sundance just a few months ago, and it won the World Cinema Jury Prize in the doc category. Yeah. Pretty minty, nice. And I watched it, and I had no expectations, but I loved it. Herbert, you saw it, right? You loved it, too. And Jay, did you see it?
No.
Alan?
No.
Not yet, but when you do, you're going to want to, for programmers in the audience, this is another one you want to program. The Russian Woodpecker, we're going to look at the trailer, but it blew me away, and I was very happy to be put in touch with Chad Gracia, who is the director. And then a complete surprise is that Chad said, oh, by the way, Fedor is here as well, who is the subject of the film, and do you think he should come? I was like, no, do not bring Fedor. Because of course he should come. Are you kidding? I couldn't believe it. I was so excited after seeing the film. And so I hope you get enough of the trailer and the conversation to be as excited. So let's look at the trailer. Here we go again. And then Fyodora can do the trivia question. Poor Fyodora. All right, here we go. We're going to watch the trailer of The Russian Woodpecker.
Chad Garcia and Fyodor Alexandrovich. Come on up. Nice to meet you, Chad. Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming all the way from the Ukraine. Just for me.
Forgive me, I am without church now.
You know what? If you're apologizing for not understanding, that's great. But talk into the mic. Just talk to you. Sorry, we're gonna make you. How do you speak?
I can translate.
You can translate? Oh, fantastic! Because my Russian very very rusty, very rusty. Я говорю по-русски.
Ah, good.
Очень хорошо.
Молодец.
I don't know, I've run out. Карандаш. No, that's a pen. But I try. I remember 5 or 6 words, that's all. But my accent is incredible. And that's all that matters. Unless you're in the country and then they, of course, think you speak the language and then you get in trouble. Well, back to clumsy transitions. Welcome, Chad and Fyodor. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I welcome you to New York, to Brooklyn. First, Fyodor, have you been to Brooklyn before?
Yes. In the Bedford Street, it's wonderful. The poems of Bedford Street from Brodsky. I lease about this. He live here. Yes?
I didn't know that.
Understand me, maybe you can translate
Joseph Brodsky, I guess, wrote poems about Bedford Street.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
So, wait, this is your first time to Brooklyn?
No.
Okay.
Second.
Oh, second. Okay. This trip?
No, he was here last week, I think is what he said. He was lost.
No, I it's going to be impossible, yes, because I meant this on this trip, but that's okay. So this is very exciting, right?
Exciting. When spring, yes, but the first time it's very, very, very strong wind and froze.
I don't know. We have this idea, and I've been to St. Petersburg, but it was in springtime, I think, and it was perfectly comfortable. But we always think of Russia and Ukraine as being very cold. I don't know why I'm talking about it. Let's bring up a weather app. What the fuck am I doing? This film is fantastic, and it's going to be at the Montclair Film Festival, and that's why, Tom, interrupt me if I ramble for Pete's sake. Why are you here? Holy Moses. Scott, are you still here? Thank you. So talk about making this film. First of all, how did you meet? I mean, obviously everybody asks you that.
Let me tell the story. I was in Kiev. I worked in theater, so I was doing a play, and Fyodor was our designer, set designer, costume designer. And while we were doing pre-production, he kept pulling me aside and whispering something about a Russian woodpecker. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I thought maybe my Russian, I wasn't translating it correctly. But after about a month of nagging, I thought he wanted to take me to a zoo or a botanical garden. I went to Google, I looked it up, and I discovered that the Russian woodpecker was this giant Soviet antenna that the CIA thought was a mind control device. I had never made a film before, but I thought this could make a nice
film. I know this is your first feature, but you never made a film.
I never made a film, no, but I thought this would be a 5-minute piece for YouTube. So I said, okay, Fyodor, let's research, let's go to this antenna, let's film it, and let's interview 2 or 3 scientists, and we'll figure out what it was. And he said, no, this is wrong. To find out what it is, we must follow my dream. I had a dream. First, we must build a raft out of mirrors. And then we must sail across a radioactive sea, and I must be naked, and I must have a torch. And
but everybody's had that dream at least once. Truthfully.
So at that point, I realized that it would maybe have to be a 10-minute film, a little bit longer, And but I was there's something about Fyodor, I just thought, I've got to follow him, I've got to see where this goes. So we had a parallel movie. I was trying to find more traditional investigation, and he was recreating his dreams. He was deeply wounded by Chernobyl, the catastrophe, and for him, this is a personal a quest to find closure and to find the criminal behind the Chernobyl catastrophe.
Okay, well, this is a good point to ask Fedor, because you were four, Fedor, right? You were 4 years old. You were four when Chernobyl happened.
Yes, yes.
When the
yes,
when the, expo- yes, yes, when the yes, yes. Explosions at Chernobyl happened, and so, but why did this become such an obsession, I guess, and why were you so determined to pursue the story?
Почему это была обсессия для тебя? Ну, ты всего... Почему обсессия для тебя? И ты сказал, что сначала не было обсессии.
What is it obsession?
Обсессия.
I don't understand. I'm sorry. When I have four, that is a nuclear catastrophe in Chernobyl, yes?
Right. Yeah.
And yes. I have problems that me, my parents come in the St. Petersburg from Chernobyl, but not in another family, not with me, mm-hmm. but in the Detskidom.
Orphanage.
Orphanage. Yes.
Right. They the first thing they did, I guess, or relatively early on, right, Chad? They got all the children from the region, and they got them far away from Chernobyl, obviously, and they brought them. A lot of them went to orphanage.
After like, a few days, after a few days, okay. His family had connections, so he got out early.
Oh, really?
By the end, they were just pushing children through windows of the train with a tag saying, you know, Petersburg and a phone number if they got there. So he got out a little earlier, but his parents couldn't go with him, so they sent him to an orphanage.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, but the вопрос это почему такая важна для тебя, чтобы найти преступник?
I not search the criminal in Chernobyl catastrophe. I think that is uncriminal and search that criminal not. Do you understand me? And when we very very случайно
luck accidentally
coincidentally mm-hmm. Found the criminal, it's very big trauma for me, but I believe in evolution. I think that evil evolution in not evil, but the life show me that is I am not right. That is evil begin the Soviet Union, but very, very big evil, and more people was murdered, was killed. And the end of Soviet Union was big, big, big evil, that is Chernobyl nuclear catastrophe. It's the evolution of evil, yes.
One thing that important, if it didn't wasn't clear, is that we didn't think there was a criminal at first. We were just doing a simple piece about, really, I wanted to debunk this idea that it was a mind control device. And then in the midst of, we started interviewing Soviet generals, it was very clear they were hiding something, they were lying, and that's when Fyodor sniffed out that there was that there might be a criminal. So it was not our original intent.
When we're speaking with the first Soviet generals, and I asked him about connect with Duga and Chernobyl catastrophe, his hand began so make. And he began to speaking about his working for the humanity, and us, we are good for all humanity. And I think that is dark story, yes, understand me.
Yeah. It's a remarkable story. It's a remarkable film, and it's haunting, it's beautiful, Tom, jump in, please, by all means.
So we
should even take questions, too.
One of the other things about the movie is, of course, that the time when you are shooting Fedor and we're doing all this is in the middle of the Ukrainian Revolution, and that he speaks in Maidan, and this is a big moment for the country. Can you talk about being, you know, you're not just a witness to the past, but also to the present and the future of Ukraine?
Yes, well, one thing to say is that when we started the film, Ukraine, one of the reasons I wanted to film there is because it was the most peaceful place that I had ever been. There was no sense at all that there was trouble on the horizon. Fyodor would go into every meeting and say, the Russians are coming. And everyone thought he was totally nuts.
Wow.
It was about a year before any of the troubles. So I like to say that Fyodor himself is like a giant antenna, that he felt this somehow before everyone else. That the artist's role, I suppose, is to is to feel these things have hunches before anyone else does. Well, so we, again, accidentally found ourselves in the middle of a war and revolution that Fyodor had predicted. How was it to actually film through that? Very difficult. Our cameraman was shot by a sniper. Two of his friends were murdered. The camera saved his life because the bullet went into the lens. The KGB came after Fyodor when they discovered that he had...
two broken cameras.
When they discovered that he had uncovered a fact that they didn't want uncovered, they came and said, that's it, stop the film, or your son's at risk. So it was very difficult to shoot during that environment, and you know, we were lucky that that we made it out, you know, with limited trouble. Yeah, he's.
There's a lot of humanity in the film too. It's just you know, and it's like you. I don't know. Do you feel like, is there a sense of accomplishment or a sense of, you know, do you have any kind of gratification from making that speech, which you guys will obviously see now that you're, I know you're all going to see the film now.
Ты нашел такая-то, ну, твой цель или конец? Это ты чувствуешь как себе, как ты сделал, что ты хотел? Ну, нашел конец, можно сказать.
Yes, I understand question, but it's difficult for me, difficult questions. But its finish is maybe as for the jet is the finish of film, yes, and have we finish of film? Maybe change a little yes, it's a little episode, it's maybe. But when we found the finish, that is finish of life. I will not found this moment, but I feel that this film will help my country and help my nation and help my friends and help also community, all sure. Ukrainian community. And retold for world truth about Ukraine. That is all idea in people in world that is incorrectly about Ukraine. That is not as Ukraine as I see Ukraine. And, but we chat help all Ukraine show all world the really Ukraine. It's wonderful. He was Jenny.
And Chad.
So.
Now, are you a filmmaker? You have a award, you have a festival awards, you're playing at the Montclair Film Festival. What date, Tom? Is it? Do you know? Can you find?
No, it's playing in the second half of the festival.
Okay.
Twice. We have two screenings.
Two screenings coming up, okay.
Yeah.
And we'll be giving away tickets, by the way. We're going to have a question coming up. But do you feel. Do you identify as a filmmaker?
Not yet. I feel like a storyteller, and I worked in theater for a long time.
Right.
So I feel, I still feel like, you know, I meet people that have been working and published books and have, you know, they're so deeply immersed in this wonderful community that it's very new to me. So I feel like maybe in a few more years, after a few more films, I can...
Just
eat
one.
Just start using the word filmmaker.
Yes, yes, I'm a filmmaker.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Get a tattoo.
Just keep saying it. And, wow. So, all right. Well, guys, I don't know. I didn't really go to the questions because of the nature of this. You haven't seen the films. I understand that. So, but if you have any questions as we wind down, I'd be happy to field them, and we can. Don't feel compelled if you do. Raise your hand, I guess is my point.
How long did it take you to film the documentary in Chernobyl?
The question was, how long did it take to film the movie in Chernobyl?
Or the filming actually at Chernobyl or the film itself?
In general, I couldn't get it.
Really, really short. It was about a 10...
He lives in Kiev, right?
Yeah, he lives in Kiev. It was about a 10-month shooting and about 10 months of editing, which... I didn't know at the time, but I guess it's a relatively short.
And
And it was dictated by events beyond our control. I mean, the revolution started, and then halfway, and then we had our climax, and then, you know, we had to flee. So,
did you have a question? Okay, well, Tom.
Sorry, I'm hogging the microphone.
Yeah.
Chad, can you talk about working with an artist like Fedora? I mean, he has his own point of view and his own perspective, and you guys are essentially collaborators on this movie. Coming from a theater background, which is a very collaborative background, I assume that gave you a lot of guidance on that process, but collaborating with an artist like
It was extremely difficult, extremely challenging, but ultimately fruitful. I think Fyodor didn't really trust me or respect me as an artist in the beginning because I had no experience at all, and I showed up with this idea, kooky. He thought it was kooky to go interview these Soviet scientists because he knew they were going to lie. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have much faith in this radioactive sea raft floating across with him naked. But then when I saw him naked on the sea and then I followed him on this journey, I started to really respect him. And I think when he started to see that these interviews, even if they weren't telling us the truth, they were leading us somewhere, he started to have some more respect for me. We lost all of that halfway through when the KGB came and told him that I was working for the CIA. And then he put a big distance between us, and I was under the impression that he was secretly filming me and making a movie about me to protect himself. And then I started filming him secretly because I wanted to find out why he was backtracking on all of his theories. So for about a month, we were very skeptically, suspiciously...
Circling each other.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I'm shooting both of you right now. That is the truth, actually. So there you go.
But in the end, and he didn't know until Sundance that I had filmed him secretly. He had not seen anything.
That's remarkable.
And I was very nervous what would happen when he saw that there's this secret camera where it takes a lot of courage. Well, I guess it didn't take courage because he didn't know it was being filmed, but it took courage for me, I guess, to show it.
Yeah.
Someone asked in the Q&A, they said, Fyodor, how did you feel, you know, your friend, he broke your trust. He said, well, when I came into the screening, I thought that I knew I was the protagonist. Now I see that Chad made me both the protagonist and the antagonist. So for me, it's twice as good. So in the end, our collaboration worked out just great.
That's wonderful. How's your Fedor? How's your son?
My son, wonderful. And what? I don't understand the question.
Yes, no. You did. You said he's wonderful.
No, потому что они как угрозы были.
The movie hasn't been seen much in Ukraine or Russia, you know, I think,
well,
we've been invited to several film festivals in Moscow. We're not sure if that's a trap or...
So, I see that, yeah.
What he said earlier, very briefly, is that he was very nervous before the film was released.
Sure.
Because then it was...
You see that in the
film. He was the only one who knew this, with his theory. Now that it's out there in the world, he feels a lot safer. Because
right, of course,
you can't just silence. No.
And
right.
I am not enemy for these people, but I ever can speak. That is the secret camera, and I speak and I finish the only. Yes, I understand.
Yeah, yeah, he'll tell. Yes, he can just tell the KGB. I didn't know it was all secret camera. It's Chad. Talk to Chad. Yeah, he's.
Fedor, let's go to the next trivia question. Here we go.
Oh, that's a good one.
This is a good one. Here, let me just.
Can I answer this one?
No.
Answer it or ask it. You want to ask it? Is that what you mean?
No, I want to answer it.
Okay, either Chad and or Fedor, you should ask the question for the listening audience. Oh, I love this song, by the way.
I think that it would be really interesting if Fyodor did it, but it might take up to 20 to 30 minutes. So,
okay. That's right. It's not in Cyrillic characters. Come on. That was good. I know. All right. Name the 1986 film. Somebody already got it. Name the 1986... No, I'm just kidding. Name the 1986 film in which Mavis Staples' father, Roback...
That's spelled
Pop Staples played a voodoo witch doctor and performed the song Papa Legba.
But extra points if you can name the director.
Oh, you're right. And that director, there's a reason why you said that. Well, I think... Oh, here's another one. Look at this one, by the way, Jessica Edwards. Look at this question. This is a bonus question. Gary Hustwick.
Who's that guy?
Don't know. You know who he is. You live with him. The executive producer Mavis has made a trio of documentaries, and I've seen them all, about the world of design. One of them is called Helvetica. Name at least one of the other two films. And if you can do that. Very, very funny, you. All right, so listen. I think we're winding down here, right? Let me go to this right here. Look at this. I put this slide together. That's how together I am.
Yeah.
Thanking everybody who... I want to thank, of course, Fedor, Chad, Jessica, Morgan, Tom Hall, Scott Rogowski. Thank you all for giving your time, for your wonderful, beautiful friends and your artwork. And thank you all for coming out. Thank you, Videology, for getting me to do this in the first place. And I'm going to be back in sometime in May or June, one-on-one with the director of Blue Valentine and A Place Beyond the Pines.
Wow.
That's right. Director. He's a new film coming out. His name is... I don't even know who he is. I'm not even sure who that is. Derek Cianfrance. He's going to be here. So we're going to do that. I'll have a date up soon for you to know about that. And then we're going to be at DCTV in Manhattan. You know DCTV? A great documentary resource center. And we're going to be doing something with Liz Garbus. She has a new film out.
Also in Montclair.
Wait a minute. What?
Miss Simone.
I'm so sorry.
Miss Simone happened about,
I what about, of course, another great artist, Nina Simone. So I'll be doing that too. So keep do tune in. I'm doing my best here, folks. Help her brother out. Spasiba. Thank you. Gracias. Merci bien. Thank you, everybody.
Enjoyed it. We will do a better job with audio in the future. Again, I mentioned the technical part of it. I know what I'm supposed to do. Executing it is another thing, of course. I'm not exactly a one-man band. I definitely have help, but you know, I have to do the lion's share of it, and I'm not always doing picking up on the details. I also want to thank Zach Pugh Sanford, who shot the event. And we'll have a video up, I guess, soon. I want to thank also my associates, I guess, TJ Elledge, who took some pictures, Herbert Gamble, my friend and of the podcast, who helped with the trivia questions, and for general support. Thank you so much to and everybody at Videology, finally, who helped, mostly Austin, Kim and Wendy Chamberlain over there, and we're going to do some more events, as I mentioned at the end of the live show. So thank you very much for that, and we'll be back in a couple of days with an all new typical pre-recorded show. Episode number 290 will be coming up in just a couple of days. At the beginning of the week, we'll get a new episode up. In fact, we'll probably have two episodes coming up next week because we're a little backed up now. But thank you for listening. This has been episode number 289 of the podcast. I'm your host, Adam Shartoff, and thanks for listening.